Pearl Church exists to express a sacred story and to extend a common table that animate life by love. A primary expression of our sacred story is the weekly sermon. If our sermons inspire you to ponder the sacred, to consider the mystery and love of God, and to live bountifully, would you consider supporting our work? You can donate easily and securely at our website, pearlchurch.org, or follow the link in the podcast notes. Thank you for partnering with us in expressing this sacred story.
So my dissertation, the title was Moral Discrimination and Mental Health of Transgender and Nonconforming Christians. So I thought today I would just read 170 pages of it. I'm not going to say anything about it. I do want to say thank you very much. Some of you did participate in that. We're interviewed for that. I'm just so grateful to hear people's stories about that. My understanding is we're supposed to just tell a little bit about ourselves so you know us and hopefully feel a little more comforted about the oversight team. And so I'm going to start with a picture of, back from the beginning. I'm the youngest one on the left with the little curlies. So this is our family in the church directory. Remember those church directories? So this is the Rodriguez family. I was raised in a very conservative, evangelical, legalistic church. Didn't go to the movies till I was 18, couldn't dance, you know, all that stuff. Everything was very laid out, very black and white. Everything had to be either right or wrong. You're a Christian. And if you're not a Christian, especially if you're our kind of Christian, would be better, then you're out. So it was all very binary, right? And that's how my mind worked growing up. And then I realized not everything is that simple. Growing up in my house, I felt very loved by my father. He had some great qualities. He was fun. We'd go camping. We had all these animals, all kinds of fun stuff. So I felt loved by him, but I didn't feel safe because you could check off every kind of abuse, and we had that. Physical, verbal, psychological, sexual. We were abused in this family. So I felt loved, but I didn't feel safe. Very confusing, right? And with my mom, she was probably a number two on the Enneagram. I am also. Very nurturing, comforting, hospitable. So I felt very comforted by her. But I didn't feel protected. I felt abandoned. She knew all this. She saw everything that was going on except for the sexual abuse. And she didn't protect us. She did the best she could. I understand that. I remember going to her once, asking her, why don't you just leave Dad? Please, you know, can we get out of here? And she said, we're Christians, and we don't believe in divorce, so you have to just forgive him. So over and over, I had to forgive him. So I was taught that forgive and forget, as far as East is from the West, right? We forgive, we don't remember, we can't hold on to anger towards the person, or we haven't really forgiven them. And if we've really forgiven them, we'll open ourselves up and give them access to us again. Super confusing. Even when I thought about God and how he forgives us, forgives us, he's loving, he forgives us, East is from the West, remembers our transgressions no more, but he's also a jealous God, and we're supposed to leave revenge and vengeance up to him. And if your country, your community, your people worshiped idols or mistreated his chosen people, he's going to genocide all y'alls. Like genocide, wipe you out. I'm like, that doesn't seem right. You know, loving God, I'm going to wipe you out if you worship idols or mistreat my people. So I had these very confusing messages growing up, lots of cognitive distortion. As a young adult, I heard the phrase that, you know, is common now, but that two things can be true at the same time. And so that's a theme that I had growing up, just trying to figure all of that out. So I'm going to introduce you to a part of me that some of you might not know about. through middle school, high school, and college, I was a full-on theater geek. I mean, full-on. You know, I wore weird clothes and had lunch in the theater and at rehearsals all the time. My first degree is in theater. I never really wanted to be an actress. I have no interest in being famous, but I just loved the, I was more of a director and did all the things with that, and that suited me very well. And then I realized I need to make a living after I graduated. So I got my teaching credential, and then I started teaching. And I had taken a lot of children's psychology classes, child development. I had been a TA for elementary school, worked in preschool. So I had a lot of experience with theater and with kids. And then so later, I decided to put those two things together, and I started a company called Performance Parties. And what Performance Parties was, is it started first with me, and then I got a bunch of employees, and we would dress up like a character. We weren't clowns. We weren't mimes. I dressed up like a character, and we'd do children's theater. So I would bring all these costumes. They'd reenact. Little Mermaid was one of the first ones. Little Mermaid had just come out. We did Little Mermaid, and then Belle came out, which I loved because I didn't have to wear a wig and I could just use my hair. We did Jasmine. We did all of these things. So I'm going to be very vulnerable, and I'm going to show you me in my Little Mermaid costume. Look at her. She's so cute. So that's me. Note the hair. So I thought because I'm showing you this vulnerable picture, I would out my husband, and I'm going to show you a picture of him. So if you don't know, he's on the far right, look, with a skinny tie. He looks a little bit like Tim Curry of, you know, like kind of Rocky Horror in that or something. And then this next picture just shows us as a couple with our hair. Right? And this is where I was going to say that nobody here rivals our hair except maybe Drew, but he's not here right now, so you can tell him. So this is Paul and me when we met, got married, and then we had a total of four kids, and he was the worship director, and I was a family pastor for about 15 years at the Vineyard Christian Fellowship in West Los Angeles. And then he got his master's, got his PhD. We moved to Florida. He was a full-time professor of music. I was a family pastor again for 5 years. And then I got my master's, became a therapist, started teaching as an adjunct in the psychology department. I'm just zooming through everything here. Got a full load as a professor and had a private practice. And then all of our adult children started moving out here to the Pacific Northwest. So we moved out here in 2018-ish. And that's when I started coming here since then. And did some teaching here. And then last year I retired from teaching. I'm probably not going to be teaching on the college level anymore. And I have a private practice as a therapist in Vancouver. We live over the bridge. So that brings us to now. And so I'm going to show you a picture of our family from last Christmas. And not everybody got the assignment, which I think is even more brilliant, because half the people are making a goofy face or looking off to do that ironic Christmas photo, and then half are being normal. So. And then this next picture is us recently, just a couple weeks ago, celebrating our granddaughter's 11th birthday. And I love these people. We are so eclectic. We are very different. I said this last time I spoke, that we've just got the gamut of straight, trans, bi, Christian, agnostic, pagan, witchy, Wiccan, artistic, science, CPA mind, carnivores, vegetarian, lactose intolerant. Anyway, we're a hodgepodge, and I love it. So this last picture that I'm going to show you is of a flower, and I just thought it'd be nicer to look at a flower for, while I speak instead of my family. And I grew that flower. It's a dahlia. I'm so proud of it. I had started a COVID garden. I was never a gardener till COVID, and now I have a flower garden that I love. And you'll notice the Harris sign in the back there. So this theme of two things being true at once, from my childhood on, just kind of wrestling with that, and then even as an adult, and the scripture that I really clung to, that I really liked since a young adult, was this, wise as a serpent, gentle as a dove. I'm like, how do you do both of those things? And so those two things can be true at the same time. We can be wise, strong, smart. We can also be gracious and kind and loving. And one of the ways that I've had to wrestle with, how do I do both of those, is in forgiveness and boundaries. So obviously I have a lot to forgive. My dad for what he did do, my mother for what she didn't do. So I've worked really, really long and hard on this, and it is such a process. But what I realized is, I wasn't able to forgive the way my mom told me to forgive until I learned what boundaries were. Now, you guys know this word, it's been around a lot, but in the when I was young, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth in the 1990s or whatever, the boundaries book and like Codependent No More had just come out. So this was new, right? All of these words. And I didn't know what boundaries were. Obviously, growing up, they were bulldozed. I had no sense of me. I'm me. I'm in charge of me. You're you. You have your boundaries of you. I have my garden. I'm responsible. You have your garden. You're responsible. And if we're in relationship, we agree on what we're both going to tend in this relationship. That was totally new to me. I had no idea about that. So when I learned, oh, I can have boundaries. I can say, no, you don't get to treat me like that. I only can let the things I want or the people I want in my life. I felt, you know, a little safer, a little stronger. And then also I learned I don't have to give everything out and serve and serve until I'm drained no more. You know, outdo each other in love and just give and give. That I can say, no, I'm done. My plate's full, or I'll exchange this for that. So the more I was able to have boundaries, the less I needed anger to keep me safe from the hurt or this person. So I didn't have to be like the, you hurt me, F you, I'm going to pull out way over here. I was able to say, I get to decide what kind of relationship we're going to have. I'm not going to let you make me an ugly person. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be vengeful. I want to be kind and gracious and generous. But you can't do that with everybody. You can't do that in certain situations. So it took years and years figuring out how to do this with my family, with my dad, and my mother too. And so the more I realized, you can't hurt me anymore. I'm an adult. I know how to say no physically. You're not allowed to be in the same, you can't touch my kids. And, you know, I was able to set these boundaries. Then I could be kind. Hang on a second. Sorry. And my dad died last year. And on his deathbed, literally, I'm going to tell you something I haven't told anybody. As he was there, unresponsive, but they say, like, he can hear you, right? I'm in the room alone, and I was able to touch him, which felt kind of yucky at first, and, you know, touch his head. And he was just such a shriveled up, like, for sure he can't hurt me, old man. He had a catheter in, which I have to admit, I'm kind of like, justice, you know? So I touched his head, and I said, which I have forgiven him years ago, and I told him to his face, I forgive you for the things you've done, even though he denies he ever did them. Later, he admitted he did do them. So forgiving my dad is like the most Jesus-y thing I've ever done. And I was able to say to him, you know, I forgive you. Go. You're free. Just, you're forgiven and you're free. Go be with Jesus. And then under my breath, I said, and F you. But I didn't say F you, I said F dash dash dash, right? The queen mother of all dirty words. I whispered that on my dad's deathbed. Two things are true at once. You're forgiven and you're free, F you. Like, I held both of those, and I was able to do that, you know, all through my adulthood. And there's tension at times, like I needed to pull away and be a little more, you know, angry, or there were times I was able to be very gracious and kind to him. So real quick, I want to go through the things that I've learned through different material and as a therapist that I use when we do forgiveness work. I'm going to real quick just talk to you about what forgiveness is not, so then we can build up the boundaries to find out, you know, maybe what forgiveness is. So forgiveness is not diminishing, denying, or excusing wrongdoing. Forgiveness is not enabling. This next one is tough for some people. Forgiveness is not waiting for an apology, right? They don't have to acknowledge it. They don't even have to be part of it, and you can still forgive them. Certainly helps if they do. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Forgiveness is not ceasing to feel the pain. Ain't that the truth, right? I had to deal with, you hurt me. It's like if a drunk driver hurts you, it's not fair, but you have to go through physical therapy. So I am now, as an adult, responsible for the harm you did to me and how it impacted me. I take that. I own it, and I'm going to be healed of it and not be dependent on you, give you the power if I'm going to heal or not. Forgiveness is not a one-time event. About every time we would say the Lord's Prayer, forgive our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, I had to forgive my dad. Almost every week I would go through that in my head. Forgiveness is not pardoning or neglecting justice. Forgiveness is not trusting, and forgiveness is not reconciliation. This idea of two things being true at once, wise as a serpent, gentle as a dove, forgiving but having boundaries. That's one of the things that I, you know, that's part of who I am. And so when I show up at the oversight team, that's part of what I bring. And we do that in such a beautiful way at the oversight team, where I really believe we are like wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove. And one of the ways I see that manifest is in, we talk about finances and the parable of the talents. You don't want to just keep it, so you invest and be bold and put it out there. But also, let's be a little conservative and smart about how we're going to do this. And I think we do that. We don't like... my son has a bunch of money in crypto, so no offense to crypto, but we don't put our money here from Pearl in crypto. We don't put it in risky things. We also don't just keep it. So we invest, but we invest in a way that we believe is wise and cautious, so we can get something in return more than if we had just kept it there. And we at Pearl, we're very clear about who we are. We're very proud of what we represent and what we believe in. But we also have diversity of thought and diversity of beliefs. Like, you do not have to believe a certain way or think a certain way in order to be welcomed and part of this community, even to be a member. So we don't have a list of beliefs and dogma, but we do have a list of values and rhythms, and we have guiding principles. So to me, that's in the oversight team, how we do manifest this thing that I've, you know, for my life up until now and for the rest of my life, figuring out how are we holding space for two things to be true at the same time. Wise as a serpent, gentle as a dove. Okay, that's it. Will you pray with me? God, I pray that if there's anyone here wrestling with how to forgive and how to have boundaries, that you would speak to them and provide ways that they can find out more about that. And I pray that we at Pearl, and especially in the oversight team, you would instill in us wisdom and gentleness. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope that this sermon inspired you to ponder the sacred, to consider the mystery and love of God, and to live bountifully. If you don't already support our work, will you begin today? You can donate easily and securely at our website, pearlchurch.org, or follow the link in the podcast notes. Thank you for partnering with us in expressing this sacred story.